Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile.
With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Welcome to the Irish Farmers Journal Weekly Podcast.
Hello and welcome to this week's Irish Farmers Journal Podcast. I'm Katrina Morrissey and I'm joined in studio by beef editor Adam Woods and political correspondent Pat O'Toole. It's been another busy week so far, and we've lots to talk about. But first, let's concentrate on the front page story this week and what must be good news for anyone with sucklers, Adam.
Absolutely, Katrina. I guess this is the time of year when suckler farmers sell their weanlings. So we looked at Shane Murphy, looked at the prices over the last 5 years. And yeah, we're seeing real good, we'll say healthy trade there for good top quality weanlings. Over the last 5 years, we're seeing, you know, the gap really widening between the top third of weanlings and the bottom third. And that's really interesting to see that because, you know, maybe with suckler cow numbers dropping, we're going to see, you know, better prices coming forward. We're seeing €300 now there of a gap between the bottom third and the top third. That compares to a 5 year average gap of around €200. So yeah, very, very positive. And as I said, weanling sales around the country really ramped up over the next few weeks, so it's good positive news.
Give me an idea for someone from dairy country, what is a top quality weanling and what is the bottom quality weanling?
Yeah, so I suppose we're looking sort of around that €3 a kilo. So really, if you're at the top of your game now in the suckler in suckler farming, you're looking for the top quality weanlings to be heading across that €3. And we've seen that in the last week on MARP bids. I think 300 to 400 kilos animals, they're the most popular, I suppose, weanling that farmers will be selling at this time of the year. They're up at sort of €3 to €3.10 on both the bulls and the heifers. So really, farmers should be targeting, you need to be getting up there at that €3. And if we come back to dairy-born progeny, I guess we're looking at, and they're included in the analysis, you're probably back around €2 a kilo, maybe €2, €2.10. So you're probably that euro a kilo of a difference between the bottom third and the top third, and that's transpiring into that €300 a difference.
So there is obviously a real preference there for the beef bred weanlings, which is obviously potentially going to be affected by one of your other stories in the paper. It's on page 3, but a significant fall in suckler cow numbers.
Absolutely. The latest data from the Central Statistics Office was released this week, and it shows a drop of 43,000 head in the suckler cow population. We sort of thought that this was coming, but we didn't realise maybe it was going to be as high as it was. That's a 4.4% drop, and it's one of the biggest drops in the last 10 years that the suckler cow herd has seen. And this is in contrast to the dairy herd, which is growing. I think it's up 36,000 on the same period, we'll say June to June, June 2020 to June 2021. And look, there's going to be challenges there, I guess, with the suckler herd in terms of dropping. Some people say that it maybe BDGP, which ran from 2015 to 2020, that actually had a stabilising effect on the national suckler herd because farmers needed to keep those suckler cows. They needed to genotype a certain amount of animals every year to be compliant with that scheme and to get the payment. There was an extra year then added onto the end of BDGP, which was in 2021, but some farmers didn't opt for that extra year, and obviously they have liquidated their suckler herds and sold them off. It'll be interesting now to see, I guess, on a county by county basis where the drop has taken place, but I would envisage that it's in the southeast. We've seen a lot of dairy herds expanding, and maybe towards the west we'll see more stabilized numbers. But yeah, I come back to the trade of weanlings. There could be a silver lining in this, in that if suckler herd progeny get, I guess, less plentiful, then possibly for those real top quality animals, we'll see a really good price because farmers around the ring, they see real value in these top continental weanlings in terms of the efficiency that they bring to a finishing business and the quality in terms of the grades when they kill them out. So, yeah, it'll be interesting to see how it plays out.
Do you see it? You mentioned herd liquidations there. Do you think that's where the drop is coming from, or is it multiple farmers cutting back on a smaller scale? Or do you suspect that it is a complete switch from sucklers to, in some cases, dairy or another enterprise?
I'd say it's a combination of both, Katrina. The last time we looked at this, it was the counties in the southeast. It was Waterford, you know, maybe the Midlands in terms of Offaly. There's been a lot of transfer over to dairy herds and dairy farming in those Midlands counties that wouldn't have been exploited maybe before. And we've seen numbers stay pretty stable in the west, but numbers will I think fall down as well. You know, suckler farming, it's at a sort of a crossroads as regards supports, and people are unsure, I guess, in the next cap. There's a lot of talk there around the €300 a cow subsidy coming in, but if that didn't come in, I think we'd see suckler cow numbers drop an awful lot more. We're seeing a huge change in our national kill. If we looked at our national kill 10 years ago, 60% of the animals came from the suckler herd, 40% came from the dairy herd. For 2020, that has changed to 40% from the suckler herd and 60% right. from the dairy herd. So that's a huge challenge going forward as regards, yeah. I guess, with grades.
A full reversal there, or a swap in positions. We did see a little bit of tension in the Farmers Journal webinar the other night, the farm leaders debate. We had all of the bigger farm organisations. So we had the IFA, the ICMSA, the ICSA, INHFA, Grain Growers and MACRA. So no shortage of people to talk to. But we did see a little bit of tension there between what you would say is the suckler sector and the dairy sector. That was between Dermot Kelleher in the ICSA and Pat McCormack in the ICMSA. What did you make of that?
Yeah, I guess, Katrina, this was two farm leaders looking after their members in terms of Dermot Kelleher is representing beef and sheep farmers. And he made a very good point as regards, I suppose, the dairy breeding that beef farmers are expected to deal with and to try and make money out of some of these calves. It's very, very difficult. And look, we've been showing that as a result of our own programme and Thrive in terms of some of these animals coming very, very fat at a very young age. And there's a real challenge there in making money out of that. And Dermot made some very good comments on I suppose, the dairy herd. The dairy farmers will soon have to, you know, grasp this nettle and see how we can improve the genetics being used in the dairy herd to bring a raw material to a beef farmer that they can make money on. And Pat McCormack, I guess, again, representing his own farmers who are dairy farmers, said that, you know, there was inefficiency within the farm gate, within the beef farm gate. And look, there probably is. But he was adamant that there is opportunity in dairy beef. And he made the comment as well, I guess, that using the right genetics, I think Pat was admitted that the right genetics had to be used. And that's positive, I suppose, to see Pat McCormack making that comment, that he acknowledges some of the genetics that's been used in the dairy herd at the moment aren't going to be profitable for beef farmers.
Yeah, and the dairy beef index, I mean, that is what most people would be kind of pinning their hopes on, that the dairy farmers will choose bulls, choose AI bulls that will give a beefier type bull and heifer calf at the end of their season. Do you put a lot of store in that?
I would, Katrina, but I think maybe we need to take a step back from that. I know there's a lot of people saying the dairy beef index will start to work, but I suppose if we look at dairy calf registrations for the dairy herd, I think there's less than 50% of them with a sire identified, and I think really to get the most out of a dairy beef index, we need to move to a DNA we'll say registration that when a dairy farmer register their calves, they send off a tag, a button tag, and that calf comes back with a sire, because at the moment there's a huge amount of sire or calves going through Mars that we don't have sires on. We're losing the data on them. So even if they do have a dairy beef index, we don't know that. And I guess until beef farmers see the value of a dairy beef index, they won't start looking for it. They won't start paying more for those high DBI calves. So I think we need to start at the very beginning and work to a DNA registration at birth.
It almost sounds like it needs more trust, you know, more of a coordinated effort between, and this has been mentioned by numerous people, where there is a link up between, whether it's specific dairy farmers, individuals or groups of dairy farmers with beef farmers who would like to take on a calf that is from the dairy herd but has good beef genetics in it.
Absolutely, you hit the nail on the head, Katrina, in terms of working together. I know there's been a lot of talk in the last 3 weeks, I suppose, around Gerry Boyle's comments on advocating, you know, Chagas that shift into dairy beef production. That has really irked beef farmers in terms of, you know, Chagas quoting research that really isn't there. We've looked at that in the beef pages this week in terms of the research, and there isn't a huge difference between dairy beef production and suckler beef production. But dairy farmers need beef farmers to rear these calves. God forbid if there was a phone call in the morning and it said, we can't export calves here anymore, we'd be in big, big trouble in this country because we don't have the facilities to rear calves on dairy farms. We don't have the facilities on beef farms either. So we really need to think about it. I'm not too sure whether Chagas has modelled that out, but that would be Armageddon in terms of calves, because we would, I don't know what we'd do, to be honest, in terms of looking at what we do with those calves. So dairy farmers need, we need to work together on this one. You're right.
We did have some good news, I suppose, given that we do expect to export huge numbers of dairy calves to the continent. Stenaline came out this week and said that they will be taking calf lorries as normal next year. So hopefully no issues on that front. But I think you're right. Structurally, we're not at all set up as a country to keep the number of calves that are put on the ground. Pat, there was a lot more in the debate on Tuesday night than whether it's suckler or dairy cows are the way to go. What were the standout points for you?
There was, but I think a lot of the key clashes were between Pat McCormack and Dermot Kelleher. They clashed on dairy beef, but they also clashed on the issue of cup of payments. And on the balance of payments, Dermot Kelleher pushed hard. He said that 13% of cap should be set aside for cup of payments, which is the maximum that can go to the dry stock sector. He didn't try to pull Bobby Miller in with them by offering 2%. There's a further 2% that can be coupled purely for the tillage sector. But he said that that could pay €300 a cow suckler payment, as well as a €35 per head yo payment and an environmental program. Now, we modelled out, and you can find it on our website, how couple payments would work. And we ended up at the current suckler herd, we ended up at about €130 per cow was the maximum that could be drawn down if it was to be paid out on all cows, which we think a cup of payment, that was the way we modelled it out. We think that's the way it would evolve. We couldn't imagine the minister putting another hoop and walling off some sucker cows out of it. So I think that, but while the finances could be argued about, there was no doubt that the issue that Dermot Kelleher drew to Pat McCormack was that at the moment, according to the 2019 Chagas survey, the per hectare payment that dairy farmers are getting on average is higher than the per hectare payment that suckler farmers are getting. And if you go back to the reference years, the reason that that was generated, a lot of dairy farmers had a couple of fields of corn, or they had a lot of them had beet, but an awful lot of them, because they were quota bound at that stage for 27 years, they were keeping a lot of their young cattle and 54% of Glanbia's suppliers had non-dairy cows. So you had a very mixed farming still going on coming into the reference years on a lot of dairy farms, and that generated the high payments. Dermot Kelleher's point was, and I think it's right, that most dairy farmers are specialist dairy farmers now. The Moorpark message has been to turn grass into milk, and the calf became kind of a byproduct, which brings us back to what Adam was saying earlier, and that there's no doubt that Dermot Kelleher hit hard there. Pat McCormack came back and made the point that the ICSA have changed their tune because they were the ones who pushed hardest for decoupled payments, and now they want to recouple the payments. Having said that, the overall sense that came from the debate, and I was standing in the middle with Justin, maybe it wasn't the best place to be to analyse the debate, was that there was a huge amount of consensus. There was consensus around carbon credits on forestry, consensus around the fact that farmers need to come together to battle for a pathway towards sustainable farming within the climate targets that are going to be sent to farming, but that we can't cope with an unjustifiable burden in terms of the cuts, and that everyone seemed willing to work together, to work with government, to build that pathway. I think that
The carbon credits, Pat, sorry if I can interrupt you. We fairly extensive coverage of that this week as well. This is a follow-on from our webinar with the Minister for Agriculture, Charlie McConlogue, where he said that farmers who had forestry that was established using state funding couldn't then claim the carbon credits from that. And my God, that has stirred a hornet's nest, hasn't it? And it won't be limited, I don't think, to just forestry ownership.
No, I think this is being looked on as the stalking horse for the real argument over who owns the carbon credits across the board. And that this one, everyone's going to have a say in that, not just farming. Certainly the farmers in the room were in agreement. Minister McConnell, what he said wasn't news, because we have known that grant-aided forestry under the Kyoto Agreement that Ireland is still operating under. We chose not to move into the Paris Agreement, our targets, and we are bound by the rules of Kyoto. And one of those is that you cannot pay out on forestry planted prior to 2012. And as we understand it, that carbon credits can't be traded by agriculture up to 2030. But we do have the interesting situation where a Limerick farmer, John Harrigan, has leased his carbon credits. And the department seemed to be saying he can't sell his carbon credits, but they haven't said that he's wrong to lease his carbon credits. So that opens up an issue around ownership. You can't lease something you don't own. So I'm not quite sure where that's going, but there's no doubt we're in the foothills of what is a huge battle. And for two reasons. First of all, in terms of the carbon credits tradable for farms that are net carbon trappers, where the carbon sink exceeds the carbon consumption that the farm engages in and the carbon production. But the other one then is for, say, intensive dairy farms, offsets. So if you have an intensive dairy farm, but there's 10 acres of forestry, does that balance the books within the farm? So carbon offsets on
that
farms...
That point was made by one of the people we interviewed, that it is a dairy farmer with forestry saying, can I not balance the books, as it were, within my own farm gate? So I think there's going to be a huge debate over that to come.
Absolutely central, especially because one of our front page stories this week is in relation to green diesel, agri-diesel, and the fact that the government are now calling the excise rebate or the exemption from excise that agri-fuels have always had. They're now calling it a fossil fuel
subsidy,
which it has never been. The farmers always understood that because they weren't significant road users, that it's fielding equipment, that the excise was for road maintenance and road building, and that agri-diesel was not liable for that. So there's going to be a battleground there, but it just shows that this is going to creep into every single aspect of our farming.
Absolutely, yeah. Pat, thanks very much. And obviously lots more of that in the paper. Before I let you go, lads, Adam, this week's Tech Talk podcast, what can people look forward to hearing on that?
Yeah, I guess we're talking about, I suppose, we've an autumn breeding focus in the paper this week, and we've touched off some of the items covered in that as regards, I suppose, what farmers should be doing over the next couple of weeks as regards getting cows back in calf. And we touched off the beef trade as well, and beef trends this week. I went around the world. I didn't go around the world. I looked.
So what kind of expenses you're on, Adam, yeah. But the rest of us aren't on it.
No, I looked at a few markets in terms of Australia, the USA, South America, and it's interesting to see what way they're moving and the effect that could have on our own beef market in the coming weeks and months.
Great. So that's out on the Tech Talk podcast on Friday evening. Lads, thanks very much. We'll talk to you again next week.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers. With rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's Stamps.com. Code PROGRAM.